Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, our theme, a move for a grand jury inquiry with the Department of Justice in order to reopen the investigation into the downing of the World Trade buildings on 9/11. Two individuals will be joining us for this hour. Mick Harrison is the executive director for the Lawyers Committee for the 9/11 Inquiry, which is a nonprofit organization that seeks transparency and accountability regarding events occurring on September 11, 2001. He is currently the lead attorney in the petition filed yesterday with the Department of Justice demanding a grand jury investigation into the collapse of Buildings 1, 2, and 7 at the World Trade Center. The petition includes evidence that explosives were used to bring down the towers in Building 7. He has specialized in environmental and whistleblower cases for the Government Accountability Project. And among his cases were exposing U.S. Army's knowingly issuing defective gas masks to troops during the Gulf War, and the politicalization of science at the EPA, a mishandling of funds for supersite cleanups, and illegal waste management representing different Greenpeace and Native American tribes in federal lawsuits, and a whole lot more. Mick holds degrees from the Indiana University and received his Juris Doctorate, University of District Columbia School of Law. And the committee's website is lawyerscommitteefor9-11inquiry.org. He is joined today with another criminal defense attorney practicing in New Jersey and the current secretary and board member for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry and the president of New Jersey's 9/11 Aware, which is an educational group trying to increase awareness of the scientific and forensic evidence behind 9/11. He is also the co-founder of Quantum Matrix Alternative Media and the host of the Quantum Matrix Radio that discusses alternative healing, energy sciences, and suppressed inventions and other cutting-edge topics. David is a retired police officer, an Army veteran, and in 2009 he ran as an independent against Chris Christie for New Jersey governorship and for Congress 2010. His last name is Meiswinkle, Meiswinkle. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's an honor to be here.
Mick, we're going to start with you. We need a real education on this. Many of our core audience has been listening since our very first investigative report on the discrepancies in what we were told happened and what many of the people from this audience and their family claims what happened at 9/11. Our first investigative report was 2 weeks post 9/11. When people were saying they heard explosions in the building emanating downstairs prior to the plane. And so that simply didn't make any sense. Also, there was a report on one of the news networks, I believe it was the British network, talking about the collapse of Building 7. But in the background, over this reporter's shoulder, was Building 7 still standing, and it had not been hit by the planes. Also, today, and this is the larger view, there are thousands of engineers, architects, scientists, forensic experts, investigators, members of families that perished or adversely affected by 9/11, who are looking at all the evidence, and they're saying, with one unified voice, the 9/11 official investigation is filled with inaccuracies, errors, contradictions. It is simply not acceptable. So take us, if you would, before you get to the information on your filing for grand jury, tell us, if we were just tuning on for the first time and we're not aware of the contradictions, what are the contradictions that are being pointed out now where there's good evidence by responsible people to show the official version is grossly flawed? The form is yours.
Thank you, Gary. The key contradiction that we focused on is what happened with the World Trade Center towers and Building 7 on 9/11. The 9/11 Commission report basically ignored the unprecedented event of three steel-framed high-rises completely collapsing, allegedly due to fire and the plane impacts. Using the evidence that's come since 9/11, and as you noted, there have been a large number of scientists, architects, engineers, and so forth, who pointed this evidence out, and we have confirmed it. But the bottom line is that the scientific evidence shows that explosives were placed in the Trade Center building, and that's why they collapsed. Now, noted, we filed a petition. We'll talk about that when you're ready. But the short version is the lines of evidence that we go to proving the somewhat unexpected and disturbing fact that explosives were used on 9/11. A number of firefighters who were there at the time reported seeing and hearing the sounds of explosions. And the logical next step for the government, it seems to me, would have been to test the residue of the Trade Center towers for explosives to see if explosives were present. That, of course, didn't happen. And the public was led to believe that this entire horrendous crime that killed so many innocent people was due entirely to the airplane strikes on the building and to Osama bin Laden and his 19 hijackers and possibly Massawi, the 20th hijacker, and the mastermind, KSM. But, you know, they just ignored this entire body of evidence. Now, since then, we've learned from scientists that in addition to the chemical analysis of the dust going thermite, which is a nuclear explosive, and likely nanothermite, a variation, that we also see, if you just watch this on the videos, Gary, you can see it for yourself. To me, this is like a emperor's sort of situation where the truth is just obvious. If you look at the buildings when they collapse, there's these visible signs of classic controlled demolition. One, it would be the justification or the complete destruction of the huge cement slabs before they hit the ground. In other words, in midair, you also see these squibs, these high-speed debris ejections out the side of the building, just like in a controlled demolition. Know that the World Trade Center 7 collapsed at freefall speed, meaning acceleration due to gravity, no resistance, for 2.7 seconds or so during its collapse, which is scientifically and physically impossible in the absence of explosives. And there's like several other categories we go into. So that's sort of the biggest contribution to the official story is what happened to the buildings. Now, there are a number of areas that we can get into, including the Shanksville incident, the Pentagon incident, what happened with the failure to intercept the airplanes, and also the potential for government misconduct. And we're happy to give you more details about that if you wish.
Okay, but David, I want to go a little further on this.
Sure.
Because I've interviewed dozens of individuals, including scientists, who state there are too many anomalies. For example, one Clemson professor studied thousands of photographs and found that very large beams, we're talking about multiple ton beams, shot out from the side of the building that in a normal collapse would not have occurred. The beams would have gone down with the building. In fact, some of these beams were over 100 yards away. And that, she said, showed that it was not from the fire that this would have occurred. Also, others claim that the building would not have microcrystallized, where you would have ended up with a mangled, gigantic building, as you would normally see, but the fire would have been far less from an airplane and the fuel in the airplane than what is required to melt all the steel beams. And it would have had to have melted all the beams evenly where they all collapse at the same time in order to have this free fall. And that's not how fires occur, nor is it a precedent in any other fires that they've seen with large buildings. They went back and looked at all these other buildings that have been on fire. None collapsed like this. But if you look at a controlled demolition, like the ones when they're bringing down a building, like the old Sands Hotel in Las Vegas, you see the explosions coming out and the building collapses into its own footprint. So go through some of the additional anomalies or inconsistencies and explain why these are important.
Yes, Gary. What you mentioned as far as that lateral ejection, that's one of the tip-offs, certainly, that this is not a normal collapse. Well, those girders, they weigh tons, and they were being shot out like 600 feet to the side. That's really impossible if it was coming down in a normal way. What has to be realized is that what we saw on that day never happened before, and never has happened since, and will never happen if it was a normal fire. The only way buildings could come down in the way they came down is through controlled demolition and explosions. What has happened is that the official stories, they're not true whatsoever. And the 9/11 Commission report, you can look through, and they defer to NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and you can look through the Joint Inquiry on Terrorist Attacks, and their mission was to look at the intelligence failures, et cetera. But it was NIST that was, they were ordained or mandated to explain the collapses. And what they said, Gary, was that basically they collapsed because the core and the World Trade Center 1 and 2 was damaged, and because of the insulation was dislodged, and it caused so much stress that the buildings came down. And if there wasn't multiple fires, they wouldn't have come down. And if the insulation wasn't peeled off, it wouldn't have come down. Now, what you're mentioning is the anomalies. The fact is that metal, steel, it takes about 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit to melt it. And you can't melt steel to diesel or to airplane fuel. It burns at most at 1,800. In those fires, they found in some of the droplets there, these iron microspheres, which they melt there in close to over 3,000, 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Supposedly they found molybdenum in there, which is like 4,700. I was up there I came up in November to look at the site and to pay my respects, and I was surprised it was still smoldering. And I walked around the perimeter of the fence there, and there was a lady at a church who gave me a mask. And I said, whoa, this is something. This is 2 months later, so I put a mask on and I walk around, and I did some research, and I find out later that the firemen created a lake in the basement area, the sub-basements. It was like a lake there. They couldn't put it out. And what we find out is that thermite, they create their own oxygen underwater. So the investigation never checked for explosions. They never did, and they never checked the dust samples, and they never explained the free fall. It is impossible for the buildings to fall down without resistance. There's no resistance under them. Simple, what does that mean? It means the bottom floors, all the floors, were taken out. They can only be taken out through explosions. So it would be take forever for the building to come down, and then you could identify it. You mentioned the pulverization of concrete. That's impossible for a normal fire. This was, in other words, what we saw, it was unimaginable, unbelievable, and it was because the explanation didn't fit what we saw. The explanation, in my opinion, is a total fabrication. A total fabrication. So not only do we have to investigate, and we have this petition on the Trade Center building, but the entire crime scenes with Shanksville and the Pentagon, etc., and to go back into New York City and do further investigations. There is so much here to do, Gary, and this is just the beginning, hopefully. Now, you mentioned, too, that it's before the U.S. attorney, and we know that there's a lot of pressure on him, but by law, he has a mandate to give those documents that we presented. And what the documents have, these exhibits, if you go through those exhibits, and anyone that's listening here, I will lay a wager, and I don't usually lay a wager, that after you examine the exhibits, you come away and say, my God, we have been lied to. We need a new investigation. The real suspects have not been arrested. So you can go down. I could talk for a while on this, Gary. I don't know if you want me to continue.
No. David, let's hold up there for a moment, because this is so dense, the information, and you're so familiar with it. Many people listening are listening for the first time to this particular line of argument. So as an investigative journalist and as a scientist, I want to give a different perspective for a moment. First, most people wanted to believe the official position because no one could fathom that this could be a false flag operation. As a nation that considers itself exceptional in promoting democracy, but never looking at the truth of what we've done in the name of democracy, where we have rearranged the political landscape for more than 81 countries, we want to believe our leaders. And look at the consequences of believing that there were no weapons of mass destruction. If they said that the next cloud could be a mushroom cloud from a nuclear explosion, and that Saddam Hussein was directly involved in funding the terrorists for 9/11, we believe it. There are a small number of skeptics, but the majority want to believe it. They need to believe their leaders are looking after their interests. But we were lied to about 9/11. We were lied to about the Gulf of Tonkin and they got us into Vietnam, with over 3 million dead when you count the 58,000 Americans, but also those in Laos, Cambodia with the illegal bombings, secret bombings, and then the Vietnamese civilians and population. We were lied to about Libya and Gaddafi by Obama and Hillary Clinton. We were lied to about Syria and that it was a civil war. It's never been a civil war. People on the ground who are legitimate scientists, legitimate journalists, legitimate social commentators and activists have been there and reported to the contrary, that the CIA is funding multiple different al-Nusra and al-Qaeda groups. So on the one hand, we have a completely compliant main media. You have not to this date heard one single member of the mainstream media question JFK's assassination, Martin Luther King's assassination, Malcolm X's assassination, Robert Kennedy's assassination. Not a word. They all believe in the single lone gunman. They all believe, CNN, New York Times, they all believe in the report. Now, they may find some particular issue that might not have been to their absolute liking, but at no time has anyone in the media suggested that this was a false flag. What you're doing, you're back-ending into the problem. You're starting by saying the official story has been completely debunked and we have deconstructed what we've been told. Now, since we have a government that has lied repeatedly, that has engaged in more than 63 false flag operations, and therefore even the National Security Agency, Clapper, lied before Congress and said the average American's we're not collecting bulk data, that was a lie. He has not been held accountable to it. So on the one hand, we know that our officials from the highest ranks of government, including the CIA, the FBI, the White House, are not going to be held accountable. They are, in effect, invincible. So then the media is compliant and a propagandist for the government. Then allows us to either believe in one of two things. A, the official story actually happened the way they're telling us, except they didn't do the full enough or comprehensive enough science to support their argument. Or B, everything they told us is a lie, and therefore we have to rely upon outside independent scientists and journalists, investigators and forensic experts to determine the truth, in which case we're now all these years, 17 years post this crisis, and we've put it all together, and you're saying we now have enough evidence and we're not conspiratorialists. We're legitimate researchers, a legitimate lawyer, criminal defense lawyer who has practiced in front of the courts presenting important information about crimes against humanity and protecting those who've blown the whistle. So we're not naive. Here's our evidence. And you've taken that evidence to the Justice Department. The Justice Department that has been utterly and completely politically captured for a long time. And you're asking them to have a grand jury investigation so that you can present your evidence to a grand jury. I hope that that works. But based upon how many crimes that this Justice Department has engaged in, with no responsibility for any of the top people at the Justice Department or the FBI, I think it's unlikely. I do think it's highly likely that if you're able to reach the right mediums, you'll be able to share your story with enough people that it will force the public, the American public, to have a loss of confidence in their elected officials, in their legal process. I'm just giving you that as background from my perspective. Now, that said, you mentioned Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon. You mentioned the Shanksville, Pennsylvania plane crash, where ironically you can't find any parts of a plane. And by the way, we went back to my own office, and we have scholars and residents such as Richard Gale. We looked at over 50 years of plane crashes around the world. We could not find a single plane crash anywhere in history where a complete plane and all of its passengers, luggage, engines, fuselage, everything completely dissolved, except for this one. So I'd like for you to address that. And then with the Pentagon, how is it that with any large plane, the size of the plane that is supposedly to have hit there, you would have where the wings are, at the exact time that the wings hit the building, you would have indentations. There are no such indentations. Where exactly did the plane go? You should have had a massive amount of plane left over, because a giant plane cannot squeeze into what represents a very small hole in the Pentagon. And why were all the cameras turned off? Those are the questions I would like, if you could, to address now. And let us start back with you, David.
Sure, Gary. In reference to the Shanksville matter, actually, Nick and I, we've been out to Shanksville, and we've been into, we met Wallace Miller, the coroner. And we've looked through some documents out there, and I've got some documents from there, and we're going to go back for more, but we're in mediation, so I can't talk about it right now. But I, speaking as an individual, not for the lawyers' committee, I find it highly suspicious, just as you said. This is such a strange event, and it just recapitulates everything that happened that day. The whole day was a strange day. With regards to the Pentagon, it seems, to quote General Stubblebine, he said he used to be in charge of all of Army intelligence. He said the last time I knew anything about an airplane, it had two wings. He said an airplane didn't hit the building. So if an airplane didn't hit the building, what did hit it? Was it bombs inside it? Was it missiles? Was it a combination? That has to be looked at further, Gary. That's right. And as far as you're speaking about the, we're filing this, and you have given an honest appraisal of the record of the Justice Department and the government thus far, going all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. They can never get it right, but I think here maybe because, with programs like yours and the alternative media, Thomas Jefferson would say, now this is a new fourth estate. The corporate media has deserted their mission to present truth. They're not interested in it. They're propaganda. So what we're doing here, we're trying to present truth. So as more and more people, I look at, unfortunately, this country in some ways as a fool ship that we're looked at like that by Europe, by Asia, by other countries, because they can see through various lies, and they can see that these Americans are being like stupid. We're not awake yet, and it's because we're being programmed to be that way. But this investigation that we're asking for by the grand jury is maybe the beginning. I like to say it's like a shot heard around the world in Lexington and Concord back in 1775, April 19th. That was bullets. This is information. Information very powerful, and it's being shot around the world now. We get contacts from Australia and from Europe. Everybody's following this. And years ago, I took a backpack and was gone for 6.5 months going around the world. I actually went around the entire world. And I was amazed in some regards as how the world really looked to the United States for leadership. We were a focal point. And when I was in the military, I was in Germany, and I saw that the Germans, they seemed to know more of what was going on in the United States than many Americans. So we are watched, and their media puts pressure on that. If they cover this event, this filing, and watch the history of it, it's more and more pressure on the people in this country. One, the regular people, most of us, will wake up, and when we wake up, remember we have a heritage, and that heritage goes back to the founding fathers. There were some things good and some things bad, mostly good, though, in the sense of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. That was what we have to stand on. And our Bill of Rights has been totally torpedoed, totally hijacked since this event. And if we want to reclaim our freedoms for ourselves and for our children, we have to address this. We cannot let it go any further. We have to stop it now and take the energy the other way. And that's what this petition does. It's like a match where you've been being pushed and pushed and pushed, and all of a sudden now, maybe it's like Washington making that move to Trenton when he was running out of men, running out of money, and running out of energy, and they had to do something desperate. And what they did is they attacked Trenton, defeated the Hessians, and they defeated Cornwallis shortly thereafter in Princeton, and then they went on to win the American Revolution. So in a sense, we all have to be patriots and to think of our heritage, and to look at the documents that have been presented in the petition, the grand jury petition, and that's LC4FOR911.org. And when you look at those documents, maybe that patriotic fervor will come upon you and you say, hey, this is enough. We've been lied to. We want to get our country and our rights back. And here's the scary thing, Gary. These guys have done it, are still out there. They're still out there. And we're talking about this explosion. You know, there was 118 firemen that heard explosions, and not one of them testified before any commission. 118 firemen. And there were people in the basement that heard explosions. And one of them, Willie Rodriguez, who was the main janitor and a hero, saved many people. They would not put his testimony in the commission report because he said there was explosions in the basement prior to the airplane even hitting the North Tower. This was in the North Tower where he was a janitor. He saved the person's life. It came into his office in the sub-basement area with his skin off and part of his face off. And he said the building was exploded in the basement before an airplane even hit. You had Barry Jennings in Building 7 who said something similar, that there was explosions in that building long before it came down. So to answer your question in a roundabout way, we've got to get back to our roots, Gary, and that's into what made the Bill of Rights what it is, and that was good American people, good American citizens.
Thank you for that, Mick. We interviewed extensively for 1 hour on this program live Mr. Hernandez, and I remember distinctly he saying that he heard the explosions, several explosions, and then the whole door exploded, and the man came through who was extremely injured, and he took this man up the steps, and just managed to roll under a car upstairs, up on the street, or he would have been crushed. And yet his testimony was not advised. And why? And he could not explain it. But there are multiple people who were not allowed to give evidence that would have contradicted the official position. Now, also, there's a basic law in physics, and that is if you have a structural defect higher up in a building, the strength of a building is in its foundation. That building is not sitting on concrete. There are pilings, very strong pilings, go deep into the substructure. And that's what creates the tensile strength. So even if you had a fire that collapsed a part of a floor, as long as all the floors under it were structurally sound, you're not going to have that pancake collapse. It's just not physically possible. But if you collapse the building from the bottom, where you create no tensile strength at the bottom, then you can collapse it in on itself. And that's something that's always been a puzzle to many of us. But now, David, we're going to go to another part of this. And this is purely hypothesis, and it's merely projection. And I'm asking you not for your official mindset, but rather your personal mindset based upon what you personally have observed. Bring several pieces to this puzzle together for us. As a former police officer, you know that there has to be some motive involved in a very intricate crime. You would also have to have not just motive, but you would have to have a large number of people support your efforts. You couldn't just go and paint thermite, which is the flammable that can go as high as 4,000 degrees, in a building unless you had knowledge that the building security system would be disabled or that there would be no questions asked. You then have to have a larger issue. You have to have an agenda. If it was the Patriot Act, if it was war, if whatever that agenda was, you had to have a large support system that would have to infiltrate the CIA and the FBI and probably the Secret Service, because if this was truly the act that we were told it was, then you wouldn't be able to compromise intelligence sources. But everywhere we look in the official 9/11 report and compare it to the facts, there's contradictions. And also, how was it that planes could fly without one of them being shot out of the sky? Why was there a stand down by Dick Cheney on that day? Why were there simulations taking place virtually mocking the 9/11 attack on the same day? These are apparent contradictions any legitimate journalist would want to know the answers to. Would you address these issues as well, please?
Sure, Gary. In reference to people that had something to gain, a motive, I look at it, and you've mentioned the Kennedy assassination, and then we could go through a lot of stuff, go up through Oklahoma, et cetera, what happened there, but Oklahoma bombing. But there's a number of people that seem to benefit. One is the put options on the stock exchange. That was never really explained. There's people that never claimed millions of dollars that had the inside knowledge that this was going to happen. There was the PNAC group, the Project for a New American Century, the neocons. And they had actually talked about the necessity for New Pearl Harbor if America was going to be the imperial or aggressive or military might of the world. And coincidentally, it happened shortly thereafter, within a year. There was the Patriot Act, and that was seemed to be created before the event, and it was quickly implemented. The war against Iraq, weapons of mass destruction for a country that didn't even have any weapons of mass destruction, at least that nobody's ever proved that they had them, and that we went over there. I mean, listen, everyone out there is listening to this. Is our tax dollars that financed this operation, which I don't think was declared a war, but was, if we financed it, and there was no reason to go and kill about a million Iraqi people. I mean, think of that, using depleted uranium munitions to cause all kinds of birth defects in the poor little babies that are being born forever in that soil to be contaminated, that is like most heinous to think that somehow while we're drinking our beer and watching our games, which I love to watch the game, but at the same time, while we're cheering our team on, our government is killing at a vast rate of people, or innocent people, in the name of these attacks. And, I mean, some people can, like, I've seen the politicians sort of joke about it, some of them, like, oh, we got it wrong. Well, what are you talking about? You got it wrong. So you talk about the FBI and the CIA and the NSA. Well, it seems like my take on that, Gary, is that at the top level, it's all political. So they put their boys in there, and at the little layers right below it, too, is similar. I've seen it in local police. I've seen it in local state prosecutors, stuff like that. It's in a corrupt type situation, but it doesn't have to be, but that's what it seems to be. Those who were most responsible for allowing this to happen and standing down, just think of this. The Pentagon was attacked, the most supposedly defended building in the world, and they had advanced warning that it wasn't supposedly attacked about 9:37, or depending on who's telling the time, and these planes were hijacked in the morning, early hours. The first tower was hit at 8:46, and the second was 9:03. 9:03, they knew something was up, and yet they let an airplane or something, who knows what, come into the and the people weren't told that apparently if you look to transcript of Norman Mineta, again, Norman Mineta explains the incident he has with Cheney, which really implicates Cheney in a way that he doesn't want to be implicated. And they do not put that in the 9/11 investigation report. They totally omit it. And what it says is that supposedly with something was coming in, and a soldier comes to him and says it's 50 miles out, and then he comes in and says it's 30 miles out, something like that, 20 miles out. Does the order still stand? And supposedly Cheney whips his head around and says, of course the order still stand. Have you ever heard anything to the contrary? Now, whether that happened or not, that's a good question. But they took the testimony of Mineta out. So what you're talking about, Gary, you're talking about a system that's totally corrupt. And it's been corrupt in our lifetime for the most part, unfortunately. And the fourth estate, the media, has been corrupted too. And that's not to say it can't change itself. I think the American people, if they want to be free, they have to make an effort to try and understand what's going on, because it's so much temptation to get lost in the entertainment and the frivolity, the superficiality of life. And there's so many, we're talking about the 9/11 issue, but I know as a health advocate and an expert, that there's a lot of other ways that we're being attacked, not just through this lie with regards to 9/11. So I don't know.
David, that gives us an overview. But David, tell us what the Saudi Arabia withheld papers had to say. We were told there were 28 pages, but in point of fact, there were over 63,000 pages that the FBI has had. Tell us what you know about that. Mick, okay. Do you want to take that?
Yeah, well, I can take it. Mick can take it too.
So the 28 pages, let's start with there if we could. The 28 pages were kept secret for 15 years from the American people and by Congress. And we did an analysis of that, and that secrecy was illegal. A lot of folks don't understand that. The 20 pages, when finally released, show that there was, in fact, financing of some of the hijackers by folks connected to the Saudi government. And now that we know that, that can be more fully investigated. That is one of the investigation committees we have, which we call Follow the Money Committee. We're going to be looking at that. But you probably know there's been a lawsuit in federal court pending for some time on behalf of many family members. I think the Motley Rice law firm is doing it against a lot of the Saudi officials. And they're alleging in that lawsuit that the Saudi government was intimately involved in financing the terror attacks on 9/11. Now, the Lawyers Committee is not a party or counsel in that lawsuit, but we've been following it, And I will say this, the lawyers representing the families in that case have made some significant progress. I think the release of the 28 pages may have helped to some extent, but they overcome some major procedural hurdles. I think they appealed twice, survived motions to dismiss, and are now engaged in discovery. And that is a very interesting process. I mean, they can subpoena people, they can depose people, and subpoena records, and we're all waiting to see what develops from that, and it looks like they may get to go to trial. So that is a substantial development. Now, they're not looking at the evidence that we focused on in our petition to the Department of Justice about the destruction of the building. That's a different line of evidence than they're looking at. So we're working in parallel fronts there, but I think they have some potential to make a breakthrough in that case. And let me just add, in reply, Gary, to your note of skepticism, which is understandable, about whether this grand jury petition may go anywhere, there's a detail of the law that you may not be familiar with, which to me adds a note of optimism to this process. And that is, if the U.S. attorney decides not to give our evidence that we've just been describing of the building destruction by use of explosives to the grand jury, then we can sue in the federal district court under the federal mandamus statute to get an order forcing the U.S. attorney to do that. Most folks think that the U.S. attorney's job is completely discretionary, but we found an important exception to that. The federal statute we're relying on makes it mandatory for the U.S. attorney to give this evidence to a grand jury. So I'm not, even though I understand the general skepticism based on the history of our government over the last couple decades, but I'm not as pessimistic on this grand jury strategy because we have an option to force the U.S. attorney to do their job. And Dave may want to comment on the Saudi thing as well.
With regards to the 28 pages, Gary, what it does show that there was connection there with the ambassador Bondar. Listen, from what I've seen, and I've read it a couple times, there's definitely a connection with his wife, Princess Haifa, and Prince Bondar, who was the ambassador from Saudi Arabia, and very close with the Bushes, in funneling money to people that were connected to the two hijackers, alleged hijackers, Hosni and I think Khalid, who came into San Diego, and they were supposedly being followed by the CIA from Kuala Lumpur to Bangkok, and then into Los Angeles. Somehow they lost them. And apparently they didn't tell the FBI, whether that's true or not, we don't know, but they didn't tell the FBI that they lost them or they came into the country. And they end up supposedly with at a house where the FBI asset, and they stay with them. Anyway, the guys, Omar Bawawi, I think was the name, and another fellow, were getting money, and they were taking these guys around. They end up eventually in New Jersey, and then they eventually end up supposedly on flight 77, which supposedly or allegedly was the flight, the American flight 77 that crashed into the Pentagon. So there is certainly, and there's also within the Joint Commission report where they say, from best of my recollection, that they have the intelligence agencies have a responsibility if there's an update to update the commission and to take it to the next step. In other words, no one's called Prince Bondar or Princess Haifa into court to question them on this money, these transactions. I look at the Saudi situation, though, after all these years, certainly they had a lot of money and they were financing a lot of the operation, I would think. It seems that way. And that there's certainly their names are bandied about there, the alleged 19 hijackers, but some of them still being alive, to realize that the FBI has had information that some of these people that they say were on the airplanes are still alive, and they haven't tried to qualify that whatsoever. That's somewhat astounding. So I think that the Saudis are the outer ring of the onion. You know, I think they're the front guys, the bag men, they have the money. And they're the patsies or the fall guys. I don't believe they're the brains of the operation, Gary. I think we're going to need to really dig to get to who was responsible for setting the charges, the shape charges in the buildings, Who had access to the building? What were the security companies? Who was the contractors that were working on the elevators and doing the asbestos? Who had the authorization to turn all the electric, the power down the weekend before? Who had the authorization to take the dogs that sniffed explosives out of the building? Who had the authorization to or failed to protect the Pentagon? Who had the authorization to communicate between the FAA and the FBI and the NORAD what was going on? There are so many failures here. Everybody gets rewarded, but if it was an objective investigation, everyone should be put on the carpet here as far as letting this happen. Maybe some of the people, it was just incompetence, but as some of them, it was total premeditated criminal activity, a plan, a design, a theater to shock and awe the whole world, and especially in America. And for this many years, it's worked for most people. I think the spell is breaking, and I think shows like your own will help the spell break. And when we break it, hopefully we go back to our true heritage as Americans and reclaim it, so maybe we can lead the world as a bastion of freedom that we like to think of ourselves. And right now we're living in a fairy tale, and we got to get out of this, maybe more like a nightmare.
One additional thought on what you're discussing. Please give us great detail on the Shanksville, Pennsylvania crash.
Well, we'll both try on it. That's a good question. There's a lot of questions there I have, Gary, and some of them have to do with the phone calls, whether they were legit or not. There's questions with the phone calls having to do with Barbara Alston on the Flight 77. You know, there was the trial with was his name, Massawi, and there they say, the FBI actually say, the phone call she makes when she, I think, describing the people that are doing the hijacking were never made. All right, she says that they say the phone calls that she made, her husband, who was a solicitor general, claims that she called him. I thought that, you know, I think she supposedly used her cell phone, and I read somewhere where it was later on, it was one of the air phones, but whatever, he claims it was her. There's questions, and again, this is my only my opinion, but there's very learned people like David Ray Griffin, who's talked about the voice morphing and the technology for voice morphing. There's people that have talked about drones and things of that nature, remote control of airplanes, of hijacking an airplane from the ground and steering it somewhere. There's theories that there's the 93, that's United 93, actually landed in Cleveland, that they evacuated the whole airport. They wouldn't even let people get in their cars to get out of here, and they closed it down, and two planes came in there. One was a Delta 1989 plane, and another was, some people say it was 93. So there's a lot of mystery around it. There's supposedly been a plane that was shot knocked down around Camp David that was shot down. There's people that have seen something that looked like some kind of drone that flew over, and then all of a sudden there was an explosion. I've been to Shanksville a number of times, and from a distance you can't go up to the area. Of course, it looks different, and I've seen many photographs of it. And as you said, Gary, this is the most strange scene of a plane crash, because you can't, at least in the photographs that I've seen thus far, you can't tell it was a plane crash. And the initial witnesses that come there, even the people that were like the mayor of the town or something, they don't see anything. Where's the bodies? And even the coroner says there wasn't a drop of blood anywhere. There was, you know, nothing recognizable. So again, the take on it is this: it has to be investigated. So that's why the lawyers committee would like to do that. They need the help to do that. That's why I put the lc4911inquiry.org out there. The people want to contact us if they think this is something important. Since the government's not doing it, we have volunteer attorneys that are willing to do it. They need a little bit of financing to help do it, to get investigations that cost money to do the things we have to do. We need a little bit of finances to do that. But we're willing to do that. It's a patriotic thing to do, and it's, you know, it has to be done. Somebody has to do it. So So you're allowing us to get this information out. I do hope people go to that the website, lc4911.org, and get in touch with us. And maybe we can help change things, because we can't go keep on going like this. We're going the wrong direction. And I said with this petition, I think we're pushing back now. With your show, we're pushing back. Finally, we're pushing back. Where we push it, where it'll end up, who knows? But hopefully we can clean it all out in our lifetime.
Okay. Let me just use something that's happened recently to get a final comment from both Mick and you, David. And that is, a couple weeks ago, as you know, we were told that first it was a gas attack. The media assumed it was sarin gas in Sirian Gota, a suburb of Damascus, where terrorists had been holed up for years. And then the first reporter on the scene, who is one of, if not the top reporter in Great Britain for The Independent, he said that he went to the hospital. He took the video with him that was on the internet, and the doctor says, yes, that's a correct video. But then in successive order, he completely deconstructed the events. He said there was no sarin gas nor chlorine gas, that there were bombs by American terrorist allies in the immediate area that caused massive amounts of dust, and that any time that there was any bombs going off, all the younger people would go into cellars, tunnels, any form of underground enclosure in order to escape being killed. But with all that dust, they had massive amounts of congestion in their eyes and lungs. So when they came to the hospital, there was no burns, there was no contamination, and they were washing off their faces and their bodies and giving them medication for this not being able to breathe properly. No one died, the doctor said. And witnesses claim the same thing. Now, these are people at the hospital, the only hospital. So then, instead of waiting until the evidence was in, this administration, and very important, people such as the new National Security Advisor, John Bolton, a super hawk, and the entire military-industrial complex, was up for this bombing, and 100 missiles, costing over $75,000 a missile, went into Syria. Then everyone felt that the next step would be for Israel to go in, the United States go in, and to take it further. Russia, on its side, stepped down from any retaliation. Now, here's the point. Just last week in The Hague, in the Netherlands, the young boy who was in the White Helmets video was there and gave testimony. His father was there and gave testimony. Doctor there and others from the hospital all saying there was no gas attack of any kind and putting to rest this. Multiple journalists from around the world and investigative teams have been there. Every single one say there was no attack. That meant that a false flag operation fully under the control of the United States occurred because we were so quick to respond militarily, and that immediately $5 billion in profit went into the arms makers, missile makers, value their stock. Now, that's just something immediate, and yet the American media was supporting the effort, the war, not the truth. The administration, the war, not the truth. The national security agencies, the war, not the truth. So it is not an extremely difficult task to assume that a corrupt government at every level, from the White House to the National Security Agency to the CIA to the FBI and Homeland Security, could conspire, because it has been found to do so just 2 weeks ago and a year ago and a year before that under same pretenses. So going forward, what is the message that you want to leave with this audience, which is a worldwide audience? We'll start with you, Mick.
Thank you, Gary. And to tie the event you're describing and the possible recent false flag with we started with, which is 9/11 and the destruction of the buildings. You may remember that shortly after 9/11, General Wesley Clark was pulled aside in the Pentagon by one of his colleagues, shown a secret memo which talked about a plan for the United States to take down the government of seven nations in 5 years. And what we've seen in the years that have followed is basically that those nations that were named have become subject of U.S. military actions, and Syria is one of them. So you're correct that there has been, and I'm speaking for myself here, a history of false flag operations, not just by the U.S., but other nations over history, in order to essentially move public opinion, particularly in the direction of military actions and war. And one of your questions earlier was, you know, who profits, what's the motive? And the most obvious answer is that there have been billions and billions of dollars spent on the war on terror and in these military actions, paid military contractors since 9/11 in the name of 9/11. So that's one of the areas that we'll be investigating for the Lawyers Committee as we go forward. So I would repeat that if you want to see the evidence that we filed with the Department of Justice, go to our website, www.lsteve411.org, and you'll get the details there. And if I could just add what you started with, which was the anomalies, which is the important thing to focus on. There are two types of anomalies. There are red flag anomalies that point to the need for investigation, and then more conclusive anomalies to basically prove what happened. And if you look at our petition, you're going to see some of the latter category. And as Arthur Conan Doyle said, when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. And you're going to see that if you read our petition.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Your final thoughts, please.
Yes, Gary, thank you. In reference to what you're just saying with Syria, I think these are criminal acts against the Assad government, inside the people of Syria. It seems that the sarin gas is the last thing that Assad would ever want to use now, because he's actually winning the war, my understanding. I don't know why he would want to use that, but those who aren't winning the war would want to use it. So I would say that America, unfortunately, and our allies, they should be, investigated or looked at closer as far as what motives they have to destabilize that area. And I don't think that the problem is Assad now. I think it's being generated elsewhere. As far as what we're trying to do is we're trying to get to the truth. And one of the ways we can do that is to examine these crimes of 9/11, which were the most outrageous crimes in our lifetime. And for those who were born, not born then, but it's the recent time, by looking at the grand jury petition, you'll be able to compare and contrast eventually things that should be done and look through the exhibits, and you'll see hopefully a truthful position coming through. We hope you get involved. And again, we're very appreciative of Gary Knoll allowing us the time to put forth our positions here, that the 9/11 incident, at least in New York City, those buildings were brought down by bombs, by explosions, by controlled demolition, by people inside who had the opportunity to be inside to set them up. It was well orchestrated throughout the entire country at probably the highest level possible. But there is a lot. Listen, I used to be a police officer. I was in the Army. There's a lot of good military people and a lot of good police officers that very much believe in our country and the preservation of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. And to them, I salute them, and I hope that they, along with law enforcement, start to look at this like, say, architects and engineers and scientists have looked at it and start to realize... I'm sorry,
David,
Gary.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. David, why is... Maya Swinkel, Mick Harrison, thank you both. And their website is Lawyers Committee for 9-11inquiry.org. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good day.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up?